everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Mr. Mrs. Quintel.
This is exciting. If I'm reading your reading this correctly,
what a terrible setup.
This could go one of many ways.
Yeah.
I know that you are getting married in just a few days, but
right.
I don't think that is what you communicated.
No, I'm finally, you know, yes, you're right. I'm getting married in a few days, and that's incredibly exciting. But now is finally the time where I get to feel the same love that Mr. Pac-Man felt for Ms. Pac-Man. I assume that they eventually married. I understand they met and there was a kiss involved. But I don't remember if there was a wedding or not in that game. Did they seal the deal?
I mean, they have a child, but that's not necessarily...
That's true.
You know, I respect Ms. Pac-Man for wanting to hang on to just the Ms. title. It's nice and ambiguous. It doesn't necessarily fall into a patriarchal structure of naming hierarchies.
They actually went the other way on her. They just said, we'll already call her man. We'll give her a head start.
Yeah, that's another thing.
She is Ms. Pac-Man.
Why can't we call Pac-Man Mr. Pac-Woman?
I think, hear me out here, Ms. Pac-Man may be either a gender fluid or trans, another Pac-Man. And they're having a non-traditional relationship, a non-traditional marriage. It was one of our first queer icons in many ways.
Okay. I can get on with that. And especially since it seems to be, at least in the game, I know that the art has kind of embellished it, but at least in the game, sole kind of distinguishing factor was wearing a bow and wearing some lipstick. So
right.
Really that could, that could apply to anyone.
It could be that's
I could
Mr.
be wearing
Pac-Man.
A bow and lipstick right now.
Right. If you have the urge to be like, no, that was a traditional marriage, and you're going to go Google it and prove that Pac-Man fit conveniently into your worldview, then maybe just sit down and chill out and pitch a video game or something. And
relax. The animated series doesn't count.
No.
We always say.
I also don't count canonically, even though I silly, selfishly enjoy the game. Pac-Man The New Adventures is not canonical for me either.
Okay. Interesting.
Take that, Super Nintendo.
All right, let's get into some video game pitches. One of the very first games that I ever bought on a mobile device, on my original iPhone, back when the iPhone was still pretty new, was a remake of the Tron Light Cycle game. And you just kind of like tap different sides of the screen to turn left or right. And it was really good and really thrilling. And I would just play against the CPUs and... That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that game. And so I wondered if that could be adapted into something a little bit more freeform. I'm thinking a two-player game that is played on separate iPads where basically you control kind of like a when you're swipe typing on a swipe keyboard, how you leave that little trail behind you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're leaving a trail behind, and the faster you move, the longer a tail you leave behind. Yeah, before it disappears. You try to get the opponent to run into your tail without running into theirs. I'm not sure if there's any rules about whether you can lift your finger from the screen or not, but it's kind of like Tron Light Cycle. It's kind of like Snake, but has a little bit more risk-reward in that the faster velocity, which increases your defensive ability, also puts you in a more of a position to potentially mess up and crash into a wall. So I'm going to start the clock there.
When you started describing this game, I thought it was going in a slightly different direction. Maybe this is just as interesting to you. Maybe it's not. But I started thinking, whoa, wouldn't this be a kind of interesting AR game? Because one of the new things they've added to iOS recently is in AR kit, there's occlusion now. So you can, if somebody walks in front of an object, they can actually walk in front of the virtual object. The camera knows, oh, there's something passing in front of this. So you could have little like floor races around your house and actually have to see around like chairs and couches and hallways and that sort of thing. So you'd really have to like track the object, and having a light cycle race like inside your house, almost like little remote control cars, could be kind of fun.
That'd be pretty interesting. So like an AR type thing, like in 3D space?
Yeah, but if we, you know, I think the original pitch too, to like modify that, maybe there's some stuff where, or a mechanic where you go faster with like tapping. Maybe there's like a specific acceleration that the vehicle's always slowly moving, but you can throttle up and down your speed and therefore the tail, and you can kind of have a slow moving scooching Tron light cycle war as well, but like a little bit more unpredictable with the speed.
So is this, again, I'm a little confused on like what the experience looks like. Is this something that fully utilizes three-dimensional space, or are we still kind of confined to a two-dimensional plane?
I think in this world, you could do it with just two iPads or two iPhones and do it on the screen. But if you want to explore the AR thing, I think we could too.
Okay, well, I'm happy to go in either direction, whatever seems more interesting to us.
So I think like for throttling and being very hair trigger with the speed, you'd want really low latency, and so maybe 3D, you know, in AR is the wrong approach. It'll feel a little bit more like slowly scooting wooden vehicles or something around, and on screen, I think, even just like a dial that was like your speed meter or something that you can kind of analog adjust at any moment would be sort of interesting. Like, oh, I'm going to take this corner slow and therefore I'll get a better angle, that sort of thing.
If you have a speedometer on screen and you're adjusting via a dial, what is your movement control?
So what I'm thinking here is we'll have the, like, oh my God, I need to like hold a controller to have reference or something. All right, I'm moving with the left joystick. Let's say it's a virtual joystick. I know everybody loves those. Okay. Maybe it's just a left and right tap is all it can do. And then on the right, there's a speedometer, but there's just a sort of slider that goes top to bottom, and that is just your throttle. So one of them is just an up-down. It's not like a virtual joystick. And the other one is more of a left and right. And up and down is about speed. And left and right is about turning.
Well, I guess one of the things about the Tron light cycle game, famously, is that it takes very hard 90-degree turns. And that's part of the fun of like creating unpredictable movement in front of your foes. This one seems like a little bit more of a smooth ride, a little bit more gradient in the way that it turns. Which could be fun as well. So, you know, what does this look like? How does this change the game?
That's interesting. What I was thinking is like your left and right turns and curves were totally based on your throttle. So whatever that angle of attack is, maybe you can get something akin to 90 degrees with the slowest turn. But, you know, if you're at full throttle, you actually are taking a bit of a wider berth, and maybe you can't even crash into like the edges of the screen, like that'll wipe you out too. So you yourself are not trying to take something too wide on the edges.
Are we setting it in kind of a blank space like the Tron universe, or are we factoring in actual environments with things you have to avoid and potential like bumps in the road and things that can affect your speed and trajectory?
I don't think we've seen anything that is like essentially the Tron game, but with just imagine that sort of Tron / Geometry Wars sort of aesthetic, and having a part of the screen that has tiny little, you know, lines or what looks like debris on it, and that almost acts as like a Super Nintendo Mario Kart like rough track where you have slightly worse traction on that, and so your turns are either worse or both players are kind of a little bit slower, so you can goad the other player into sort of getting on one of these rough patches. And then yeah, you can introduce just even basic geometry, like, oh, in this level, there are two rectangles in the middle of the ring. Like, those will also destroy you.
Yeah. Okay, so but let's say there's different vehicles in this case. You know, what can we do to add some variety here? What if you have, like, a limousine, which doesn't have as good of turning ratio, but it leaves behind, like, twice as long of a tail, unless it's, I guess, traditionally, the Tron light cycle thing has kind of infinite tail length that just keeps going on behind you. You can find ways to give different vehicles advantages, maybe.
That's interesting. I was also, when I start thinking about vehicles and upgrades and stuff, I'm trying to, like, are we going for like locked vehicle types versus each other and then you balance the vehicles against each other? Or do you go a little bit more sort of player can upgrade their way around and then you've got sort of a branching tree structure to balance against? I like the idea of having like a really slight track or very little tail tank that can smash through a single tail's wall just one time or something before it becomes like cracked. And then it's actually a vehicle that can take two hits or something.
Yeah. Kind of adding some physics, or even if this was represented in like voxels, how it's kind of pleasing to watch all of them fall apart and just kind of spill all over the place.
Physics is a great idea. Like maybe going faster or slower, like if you're able to hit another wall at the proper speed, you can smash through the other player's wall. So you have these matches that last a little bit longer amount of time, or as people are smashing holes in each other's tails, but maybe the tails, after you smash through, the remainder gets kind of crystallized and left on the field.
Yeah. And then you have to kind of dodge that, especially if this was like a massively multiplayer, like a, what is the game called? Adagio or something like that? The game where you're a bunch of like circles eating other circles. That's not very descriptive. This is unhelpful. kind of a multiplayer thing where people can just kind of drop in and drop out at any time.
Typed in circles eating and then circles eating circles game. Agario.
Agario. There we go. That's pretty good.
Maybe there's, you go Pac-Man style with this and place power-ups on the field where when you get that power-up, you kind of become a tail eater and then you can just like munch away at the other person. This is quite the quote. You can munch away at the other person's tail. You can sort of eat up the leftover trails that the other player is. That's also a terrible phrase. Oh my God. You can destroy the trails that the other player is leaving. For a limited period of time, like a sort of Mario Star or Pac-Man power-up thing. And then, you know, I think what you want is like a lot of ways to break from just the traditional super simplified, because it's not because it's not fun or interesting, but just because it's so done that you have to find sort of new ways to layer on top of it.
I guess that puts us up against 10 minutes here. So, let's call that a finished product and come up with a name for it. I guess this being one of my games and it being all about potentially running into the backside tail of another creature, I guess we could call it the Haman Centipede.
The Haman Centipede. Oh my God, that's gross. I love it. I was going to beg you not to call it Eating Tail. So yeah, I'll take... Somehow the Haman Centipede is less offensive.
All right. Cool. That's that's a low bar that we just cleared. Okay. What do you have in store for us today?
So today I'm kind of bringing to you either its own game, but it might just be a mode or an expansion for one of my favorite games, Overcooked. So tying into our first thing that we talked about, I am getting married in just a few days. And so I put off to the last minute going to drop off my suit at the dry cleaners to make sure everything is crisp and clean and looking good. And they turned it around in one day. And as I was getting that order taken, I saw behind this poor woman what looked like at least 1,000 other pieces of clothing all hanging on one of those crazy automated racks. And so I said, what if you did an Overcooked game, but you're running a laundromat? And when you run that laundromat, you have people coming in and dropping off clothes, and you have dry cleaning that they want. Some of them just want pressing. Some of them want different services. And then you have to sort of hang them on these racks, and the racks are all automated. And so you can send the racks to different parts of the sort of map or level as it is to move them around very quickly and potentially switch them between players. And then you could do all sorts of stuff from there. So it's Overcooked, but for a laundromat.
Overcooked for a laundromat. I like it. All right, let's go ahead and start the clock and see what we can come up with there. So laundromats, gosh, there's just so many directions. I have so many questions. I don't know what to ask first.
They do a lot of stuff,
I love being
right?
in that position. Yeah. So there's the machines, the kind of automated style of kind of putting clothes in, taking clothes out, putting them in the dryer. That leads to a nice kind of overcooked like progression.
Right. People requesting dry cleaning versus pressing. And right, you can imagine right. There's a little folding station and that whole thing.
I'm thinking, is it okay for an overcooked like game if problems arise that aren't necessarily your fault? You know, I know that in Overcooked, like, obviously there's a lot of potential for things to go wrong, but, like, technically you're in control of everything. Like, what if a machine breaks, or what if some clothes get stained and you have to deal with it, but it's, like,
right.
on a random element? Like, is that unfair? Is that how disappointing would that be?
It would make
be?
You, yeah, I guess it would make me feel like, you know, that it's just punishing me, especially if it came up at inopportune moments. But what if... I like the spirit of it. So what if, to introduce a new sort of wrinkle into that Overcooked formula, people drop off their clothes, but people drop off their clothes at different times and have different time period expectations as to when they're going to get them back. So some people arrive early to pick up their clothes, maybe sooner than you were expecting them. And so it's not just like a linear queue. Can you get these hamburgers done? Can you get these, you know, salads done? In the order that they're coming in, like a line cook would. Now you have the added wrinkle of like, well, you know, Kayla just showed up and she wants her dress. And you're like, whoa, we were working on three other things. Now we got to like drop everything and do this dress. So you could do kind of fun stuff like that. And if it were more scripted, then I guess you could learn to anticipate that as the player, but it might be more fun random.
I've been doing my own laundry for many, many years now, but, you know, so I know about various steps in the process, but like, what are other, to excuse the pun, wrinkles that we can add to this? You know, I know that there's the washing machine, there's the dryer, there's potentially hand washing if you have to. I'm a little unsure of what dry cleaning entails. I know you put it on like a conveyor belt that kind of holds it up by the hanger and it swoops it back to the back of the room and then it comes back a week later clean. I have no idea what happens back there.
One of the things I did like was the sort of, I've always been fascinated ever since I was a little kid with that rack that like has just a foot pedal and it's just constantly rotating the clothes. So I like the idea of that rack having like empty slots. And so that sort of thing where you're kind of trying to find counter space in some Overcooked levels, you have that like, oh, am I going to, how do I store the clothes that I complete? Am I going to leave gaps in between? Am I going to stagger them out? Am I going to bunch them up so that the empty space is always pooled together? Or am I going to create as many sort of quick access empty space opportunities as possible?
I wonder if you have a limited amount of soap, or maybe it costs money that you're almost kind of wagering against the amount that you receive at the end to kind of incentivize you to be a little bit more efficient, but maybe that doesn't do as good of a job as if you were to like space things out a little bit more, get twice as much done with maybe 3/4 the effectiveness.
There's stains, there's mishaps. I love, maybe there's a fun little activity in the same way that you could like chop meat and do some prep work. Maybe there's like scraping out all the lint from the dryer. I feel like scraping out dryer lint is always a pretty satisfying thing to do in reality. And if you only, it's a joy of doing your own laundry is scraping out that satisfying dryer lint.
I do like that. How do we make that satisfying in a virtual space?
It would almost be fun to have sort of a WarioWare like little squeegee mini game where you like take your finger and you just kind of like scoop little circles out of lint at a time until you have the thing fully clean, and then you can like press a button. I think one thing, because there's so many different little mechanics in here, is maybe you have to treat it a little bit more like a longer form piece rather than a very quick, you know, an Overcooked level might be like 5 or 10 minutes. I feel like this might end up being more of a 20-minute affair. So maybe it's more punishing to fail and you have to like ease up on the person a little bit.
Okay. So different types of clothing require different settings for washing machines. And sometimes they are only to be dry cleaned. If you had to kind of quickly recognize what the material is that this is made of. And that would have to kind of factor into your decision as to like when to run loads and what to load with each other. If you have to separate out the light colored and the dark colored stuff and, you know, all the stuff you have to think about when you're the hot water and the cold water, you know, all those labels that come on clothing that always tells me like, don't dry this, you know, only wash in cold water. That's always going to freak me out a little bit.
That's an interesting point. So I've used laundry services before. And if you're in a scenario where maybe the person comes and picks it up or you are just dropping off laundry, you're not necessarily dictating, hey, you have to clean my clothes by themselves. Like they are potentially getting mixed in with, although I don't, that seems so challenging to manage, mixed in with all other clothes. But if you don't have enough whites and they have a massive, you know, load of whites to do, potentially they are, you know, mixing those with other people's clothes. So the idea of having to say, oh, I'm going to take these two orders and kind of like the way you would like prep, I'm going to prep three burger patties at the same time. You are like, I'm going to take three orders worth of lights and I'm going to put them in with bleach or OxyClean or whatever people like to wash their whites in, and then do the color clothes in like a different batch and pool them together. But once you kind of set them, it's a little bit longer of a cycle. It's like more burners and longer cook time if you use the overcook analogy.
So here's a situation. What if there was like an ash storm or something in an area? And so all the clothing that you get in is all coated in like white. And so you need to spend some time to like either like rinse it off or something, because you can't tell what's actually white and what's actually like dark colors underneath unless you take that extra time. Or you could just take your chances, throw it all in a bin and wash that all together, but it might come out all stained.
Yeah, maybe you have to part one of the process. If this is like a 4-player game or something, the first person is just taking clothes and bundling them together in quote full size loads of laundry, and those all go into a laundry bag, but there's no like label or differentiation to the bag. So you have to communicate to your other players like these belong in the load with the, you know, the chemicals that you use on color clothes. And so if your fellow player just, all they get to see is like, they can either watch you put stuff in the bag or you have to tell them what's in the bag, but the bags are all generic. So they just take a bag and they like put a whole bag and maybe a satisfying little overcooked Tide Pod or something in the washing machine. So they have to communicate and pay attention as to what the contents of the laundry bag actually is.
It's pretty funny. Let's go ahead and call that one there and let's come up with a name.
I mean, overwashed is kind of,
it's like right between Overwatch and overcooked.
Overwash.
We're going to be getting some good SEO on that one.
Finally, H, you're buying into my sweet SEO strat that I've been trying to get to for 3 years. It's so juicy once we finally master it. Overwash is pretty good.
Okay.
Overwash or overwashed? What do we want to do?
I think overwash is a pretty good pun.
What's the difference?
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our community. This community pitch comes from Jason Esty, who says, so today's pitch, an open world Pokemon-like game with a focus on resource management with a big twist. You can only keep the creature in your party, meaning when a creature in your party is replaced, it's released into the wild. The released creatures are still loyal to you and will return to you if you call them, but they can also be hurt by enemy creatures and caught by NPCs. So you're always keeping an eye on your roaming creatures and may have to hunt down an NPC to reclaim them. To prevent players from holding on to the same party forever, you're incentivized to release because creatures with higher levels require more food. If you don't have enough resources, your creatures gradually become wild again. At first, they won't follow your commands, and eventually they'll leave your party on their own and won't return if you called for them. And that's about it. Thanks as always, and I wish you both the best. Awesome. Let's go ahead and start the clock there.
This is cool, Jason. I started to think what, like, the mechanic of them running away and you having to give them up, almost like a hand of cards or something. You have to discard one in order to take on another card, which works well in Pokemon, right? Because Pokemon has a card game sort of aspect to it. I like the idea of they sort of, more times they run away and you find them and sort of return them to you, the easier it becomes. So the first time they run away, it's a real, hassle to go get them back. Or maybe it should be the opposite. The more times they run away, the harder they are to get back.
So I think what we're balancing here is that these are still resources that you can draw upon. And I like this idea that the creature that you need the most is not going to be one that you always have your eyes on. And there's always that chance that it's kind of like, again, I raised this example, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, of Vanquish, where you can hold 3 guns at once. And if you pick up ammo for any gun that's currently full of ammo, then that gun gets an upgrade. So to upgrade the gun, you have to use another gun to make sure that one remains full of ammo. So it's kind of like that. It's like the creatures that you're trying to level, the creatures that are the most valuable in your battle scenarios are the ones that you have to kind of leave out in the wild, you know?
What is the mechanic that he's talking about? Like, okay, Pokemon have to leave. I'm trying to always have the right team for, like, it's an open world game, so I'm potentially moving in and out of zones. I'm trying to think about what team management looks like, because Pokemon has that mechanic of you can't get past some areas without fighting some people. And so I'm wondering if you have to kind of break that if you can't predict what Pokemon the trainer might have on them at that one point. Maybe that's nothing, but I feel like there's some potential stuff there. There's some difficulty there.
Yeah, one thing I'm curious about is that Pokemon is kind of a journey across the land, searching far and wide, as it were. And if you leave something out in the wild, it's presumably not traveling with you. So I don't really know if it just kind of runs in a random direction. And then if you get in a fight and there happens to be one of your creatures near you, it'll join in. But that kind of takes away from the strategy of type advantages and that kind of thing.
What if you could kind of go in and out of battles, kind of very analog, like maybe battles are like trainers have circles around them that the player can see. And so when you're inside that circle, the Pokemon that you have just kind of appear on screen and you can, let's say it's a controller, you can use bumpers or 1 through 6 on your keyboard to sort of send out a Pokemon. And then little action bars become available that you can press. So you can cast those moves and stuff in more of a sort of Final Fantasy VII remake-y, newish type of JRPG style. The idea of a fainted Pokemon is one that runs away on you. And so, like, when you run out of Pokemon, the battle does end, but you're also kind of without Pokemon, so you kind of go back into the world to farm a new group together. Because, like, one thing that I do, and I think you said you do something similar, is once you get your group and your group is high enough level, it's really, you're pretty locked into that group, right?
Yeah.
Like there's nobody's going to take that Pikachu and Blastoise out of my party or whatever. So,
yeah.
So I think like one thing that I wish Pokemon, you know, there's 700 plus of them. I wish it would make me engage with these other weird, like, what's that one that looks like a sword? I don't know. Like what's there's like one that's an umbrella. I'm like, that thing looks weird. Like, but I don't have any reason to use it. So the idea of an almost Zen-like, it's good. This is a Japanese game, like the Zen-like nature of having to accept that all friendships are transient. This sounds like a nihilist pitch on Pokemon. nothing's forever. Nothing lasts. You're always trying to just like recruit the local Pokemon in the area to join your team as you cycle out. Like a faint is, it's not quite a permadeath. That Pokemon is out there in the world somewhere, but you have to like do special things or use special items, special lures to re-encounter them.
Yeah. Or if it was all kind of like a hive mind for each species. And if you got one of them to like you, then they would all come to your defense if you need them. So it's kind of like managing armies in Fire Emblem or something like that.
That's interesting. So now you have this sort of synergy aspect of it, or maybe, yeah, maybe the longer you can keep a Pokemon in your party without it fainting, you almost get like Pokemon Snap, like experience points or you learn kind of more about that species, and then you get special types of items and lures, or more in your new revised Pokedex that is like a field research guide, and it starts to, the Pokedex isn't just height and weight and type and stuff, but it's also like recommended regions, places where you've encountered them. You start to map out hotspots and stuff for where they live.
Yeah, I think some of the Pokemon games play into that a little bit. There are some roaming Pokemon that you encounter once and then it'll tell you like where to find them again. So I think actually you could do that for any Pokemon. It'll tell you like what regions they're found in, but there are some that you have to specifically track, like the legendary dogs from Gold and Silver. They kind of roam all around the map, and they travel every time that you move from one area to the next. So you're just trying to kind of encounter them as you are moving throughout the world.
What else? What could make Pokemon like truly different feeling in an open world setting? You talk about resource management here. I feel like I'm never, like, you can always spend your way into riches in a Pokemon game where you can just eventually have enough Pokeballs to catch whoever you want and enough candies and stuff. So, like, what is a Pokemon where your items feel a lot more like, because Pokemon doesn't even have a difficulty, does it? What is a Pokemon run that feels a lot more like the hardcore run of a Resident Evil game where like every bullet counts, like every potion you use like could be your last potion?
Well, there are like Nuzlocke runs that people do just as like an individual challenge thing where they catch the first Pokemon that they encounter when they move into a new area. And that's all that they're allowed to catch in that area. And if a Pokemon ever faints, then they have to release it permanently. So a lot more kind of like high stakes and a lot more challenging than typical Pokemon play.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm sure this will happen eventually. It's only a matter of time and years and popularity, but maybe this is a great game to make that like a little bit more canon and let someone choose the once you're done, you're done. Like, that's it. But I think like the Nuzlocke run is also set up by how permanent your like core group of Pokemon feel.
I guess let's take this out of the Pokemon universe. So let's come up with like an original way to make this feel just at least a little bit new. So we're not just creating another sequel, because we do that a lot.
Maybe you do. Maybe there's still some aspect of like creature attraction and, you know, sort of taming and battling, but you do something a little bit more like in alignment to, like you said, alignment to a type of practice or a type of class of person. And depending on what class you sort of build up and skill tree up, that gives you certain charms and abilities and maybe even animal calls to attract certain types of animals. So you can have a very, if you do this almost Diablo style, you can have a very rare instance. Potentially a wizard has gone through painstaking trouble of attracting a particular creature to follow it, even though that creature wouldn't naturally follow it. And maybe that creature, because it's, you have to go above and beyond to follow it, it has a particular ability that's really overpowered or really synergistic with the wizard. And you could kind of do class-based taming, because I'm always, like, when I play Diablo, I'm always jealous that the sort of witch doctor has all these crazy things rolling around, and I'm just like, well, I've got my magic missile, it's pretty cool over here. I would love, an army of Hellspawn at my beck and call, and if there was just some way, almost like the Sphere Grid or some kind of crazy Path of Exile-like system to skill into one particular class, but also get some charms or some abilities to attract other wild creatures as another class. That'd be kind of cool.
Let's close that down. We've spent 10 minutes on that, and let's come up with a name for this game.
Monster Hunter. No, damn. This sounds like a video game. I'm sure it is. If you did something like Untamed.
Yeah, I'm going to Google that to see if that already exists.
Untamed : Call of the Wild.
I don't think that is a thing. Let's go ahead and snap that up before somebody else does.
All right, hold on. www.untamed.com. Okay, I own it now. Let's go.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason Esty, for sending that in. And if you would like to send something in yourself, you can do so by going to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And, of course, go check out all the other shows. And don't just check them out. Listen to them. I mean, give them a good listen. Sure, you can download them. That counts. But why not listen, too, to the other shows on the Cane and Rinse Podcast Network, like the Cane and Rinse Podcast, where they review games. Sound of Play, where there's amazing game music played every week, and interviews with some great composers. And, of course, How Games Are Made on the Sausage Factory, How the Sausage is Made on the Sausage Factory, interviews with game developers.
And to take us out of the show, I'm going to deliver a miniature pitch. How about a game that you have to start on your Xbox, continue on your PlayStation, and finish on your Nintendo Switch?
Ah, I love it.
Moving it between all three. Just for rich people.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye.
We'll be right back.